Firstly, in a lot of teen movies, the popular kids are also the bad kids, the rebels, whether they've got a cause or not. And we probably imagine it's pretty similar here in Australia. But a new American study turns the theory upside down. The findings are being presented at a conference called Crime and Violence Across the Life Course, which is on at the moment in Brisbane. Its main organiser is Professor Paul Mazerolle, the director of the Violence Research and Prevention Program at Griffith University. We'll hear from him in a minute. And Wayne Osgood is one of the conference speakers. He's Professor of Crime, Law and Justice at Pennsylvania State University, currently a visiting fellow at Griffith. Wayne, you studied antisocial kids. Are they what we might call the bad kids?
Oh, right. That's really how we distinguish them, is that they tell us they've been doing a variety of things that we would hope they wouldn't, right, such as stealing and getting in fights and so on.
Right. And what's been the theory about the popularity of these kids?
Well, one of the most influential theories in criminology says that there is a group of folks who are in trouble pretty consistently from a very young age and probably through much of their lives. And they're relatively unpopular in childhood up to adolescence. But during adolescence, there's a shift where in general delinquency rates are going to be going up, that delinquency will become more widespread to include some of the kids who were not in any sort of trouble before. And part of the reason for that increase is that the misbehavior of those who are already misbehaving comes to look pretty appealing, as the teenagers think, boy, I wish I could do all that exciting, more adult-like stuff. And so the theory has been that there's an upswing in the popularity of the persistently antisocial kids. And that's really what we were looking at in this research.
Right. So you've been surveying, well, a lot of young people. How many?
These analyses were based on a study of about 4,000 kids.
4,000?
Yeah. And these come from some surveys that accompanied tests of prevention programs in two states in the U.S., Pennsylvania and Iowa. And so we were following kids in 28 school districts.
And so what did you find?
Well, what we found was that the theory was quite off the mark. That in fact, for starters, these persistently antisocial kids were not especially less popular at the beginning of this age range, which was the sixth grade in the U.S., about 11 and a half years old. They were slightly less popular, but not notably so. And during this period, they did not gain any in popularity. Rather, that they stayed, if anything, fell behind slightly.
So this is a myth?
Seems to be. In fact, what we find is there isn't any very strong connection between delinquency and levels of popularity with friends one way or the other, that there are a lot of other bases that kids differentiate who looks more appealing as a potential friend, but delinquency is not really an important one.
But there is an exception, I understand, to this pattern, and it reflects certainly my own memories of very long ago of being an adolescent. Parents might not be pleased to hear about this because it pertains to cigarettes and alcohol.
Right, exactly. In general, we think of different types of antisocial behavior, delinquency, substance use, and so on, is going together. And they do. Looking across people, they tend to be positively correlated. But this is an area, the friendship popularity area, where they seem to function pretty differently, where the delinquent kids are, if anything, somewhat less popular. The kids who get involved in smoking and drinking start off being pretty strongly more popular, on the order of having 25% more friends, other people who name them as somebody who's their friends.
So what would explain that?
I think, and we don't have the data on this ourselves, but from other studies that have been going over the years, the way to make sense of that is that most substance use, particularly alcohol consumption and marijuana as well, is quite social. It doesn't happen with kids hiding in their bedroom near as much as it happens at parties. And that it's the more social kids who are getting invited to those parties. That you're not going to be in on the big do where nobody's parents are around and there's a lot of drinking, unless you have a lot of friends who would invite you.
Right. So they're already popular.
Exactly.
Because they're popular, they're at these events. And
right.
At these events is where the drugs and alcohol and smoking happens.
That's what we think's going on. And part of the pattern is also that this advantage that the kids who are going to be smoking and drinking had in terms of popularity is actually fading over time. It's not that participating in these activities boosts their popularity. At the sixth grade, they're 25% have 25% more friends, but at the ninth grade, that difference is totally evaporated.
And why would that be?
I'm not sure. It could be that, in fact, those are really not very healthy situations to be a part of, and that it doesn't help kids maintain and grow their friendships. And it's really mainly a matter of – it's not that the kids who are involved in substance use are losing friends. It's that the other folks are gaining friends. So it may make more sense to say the kids who stay out of that scene largely have a lot of other good things going on in their lives that help them maintain and grow their friendships.
So your mom and dad were right after all about that.
It turns out, hard as that is to swallow for a teenager.
On Life Matters today, we are talking about, we've been talking about the popularity of bad kids. In a minute, we're going to talk about a bit about youth violence. With me is Wayne Osgood. He's at Pennsylvania State University. He's a professor of crime, law and justice there. Currently, he's visiting Griffith University. And also is with me is Professor Paul Mazerol. He's the director of violence research and prevention program at Griffith and an organizer of a big conference on in Brisbane at the moment. Paul, can I ask you, what else is emerging at this conference about young people and violence? What's new?
Well, it's a good question. One of the themes, and we have some experts on conduct disorder that are looking at the activities of very young children and how that has major consequences for their future, including their involvement in violence and drugs and problems in relationships later on. We also have presentations looking more at adolescents and some prevention programs involving schools and communities. So part of the event is to look at these key questions of youth development, adolescence, emerging forms of violence and victimization, and importantly, what should we be doing to prevent these kinds of things from occurring?
All right. Well, a week or so ago, the House of Representatives Family and Youth Committee produced a report after running hearings around the country on youth violence. Mm-hmm. How useful is that report?
Look, I think it's a really important step forward. I had the opportunity to meet with the committee when they were in Brisbane, and I know they went around the country and talked to a lot of different people.
Because it was criticised for not making recommendations on drugs and alcohol.
Yes, I understand that. And, well, certainly for youth violence, we know that alcohol is a pretty important part of that, but it's only one aspect of many things. But I understand that there have been some modifications to the report. There's certainly some substance in the report that talks about the role of alcohol and drugs, and we do know that interventions targeting young people that look to prevent drug and alcohol abuse will certainly have some spin-off benefits for youth violence. So I think this is a step forward, but it's not the only step.
The thing everybody wants to know about youth violence, of course, is it any worse than it used to be?
Well, it kind of depends on how you look at it. When we look at police statistics, and if you look at violence overall, it seems to be quite stable. But when you actually look at the age groups, you know, young people 10 to 14 and other age categories 15 to 19, we've seen some trends over a 10-year period showing increases, and that's in most jurisdictions in Australia. And some of the increases are in the order of 40, 50, 60%.
That's a very concerning number for a parent, of course.
It is. But that is based on police statistics, and we know that one thing that police statistics don't do well is distinguish between whether behavior is actually changing versus whether the response to the behavior is changing. And to do that well, we need to be able to look at survey data and to actually survey large samples of young people, much like Wayne was talking about, samples in 4,000 and 5,000 young people. And if we do that consistently over time, every couple of years, for instance, we can see patterns, more stable patterns. We can see if young people's attitudes are changing, their victimization experiences, and their involvement, direct involvement in youth violence. And I think the report calls attention to that need. And then I think we would be able to look back in a few years and say with confidence whether youth violence across the community is truly increasing or decreasing and why.
So more research needed. It's just that if you look at some of the tabloid newspapers or some of the commercial television current affairs programs, you'd be forgiven for thinking that things are getting much worse rather quickly.
Yes, no, I think that's a fair point, and it does raise the issue of the role of the media at promoting some of the extreme forms and extreme incidents, and that does have the unfortunate impact on shaping public opinion. It's hard to get away from that, but we do have areas of youth violence that are quite concerning. We have problems around teen parties with the proliferation of gate crashers and the alcohol around that. We have a problem with youth violence around the nightclub districts in entertainment districts, and that's not just young people, but it's young adults as well. We have issues of concerns of young people in school and the emerging forms of bullying. But bullying's always been around, but we have more and more consciousness about it. And when we have extreme events which occur, when a young person dies, for instance, it's incredibly sad and unfortunate. But if it allows us to move forward with better prevention programs that have a stronger evidence base, then I think that's the way we need to move.
Just briefly, Wayne Osgood, if I come back
yes.
to you, the more violent of your antisocial kids, in the surveys you did, were they rewarded with popularity?
Not really. In fact, they were more clearly less popular than were highly antisocial kids defined not specifically about violence. Although much of that difference is really not attributable to the violence so much as the group for whom that violence is most common. For instance, there's a much bigger sex difference. That the difference in rates of antisocial behavior is between boys and girls is more marked for fighting. And
boys, girls are more popular than boys, aren't they, generally?
Exactly, right. And there are also relationships to the low-income family and two-parent versus one-parent family and so on. And so it seems to be mainly due to that. Now, our sample doesn't allow us to distinguish kids who are just really highly markedly troubled, perhaps with mental health problems that go along with it. And we just don't have the level of detail to separate out a group of, say, 30 or 50 kids in there who everybody has always known they have great difficulties relating to other people. That takes a very different kind of study.
Gentlemen, that is where we'll leave it. Thank you both of you for joining me today.
It's a pleasure.
It has been. Thanks very much.
Wayne Osgood is Professor of Crime, Law and Justice at Pennsylvania State University. He's currently a visiting fellow at Griffith University in Brisbane. And Professor Paul Mazerolles, the Director of the Violence Research and Prevention Program at Griffith. They're both involved in this conference that Griffith is hosting on crime and violence across the life course. This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. Richard Adie with you. Coming up later in the show, inside, while we're thinking about violence, inside the mind of a violent psychopath. But next, 40 years on from a very important book.